All right. Hello, welcome to the Mobility Podcast. This is Greg Rogers with Securing America's Future Energy, and I'm joined by my lovely co-host, who I'm going to introduce in a second. But first, a few housekeeping notes. We still have a few episodes from the TRB annual meeting in January that we'll be releasing soon. A few things happened between now and then that unfortunately delayed the release of those, but we're very excited to be releasing those. The second is that we'll be hosting a live podcast event in conjunction with NRICS on Tuesday, May 19th at 5 p.m. Eastern. We're excited to have Avery Ash from NRICS on that, as well as Mark Sussman from R Streets, Cam Simmons from DoorDash, Danielle Elkins from City of Minneapolis, and Tiffany Chu from Remix. It's going to be an awesome live discussion. Check out our Twitter account. We will post the link to that to register. Our Twitter, again, is at Mobility Podcast. Pretty easy to remember, and we'll put it in the show notes just in case. Next, we're going to turn to my lovely co-hosts. I would say that Pete is very handsome, but I can't see him today. So, Pete, I'll defer to you on the on your appearance. And actually, I don't know about you guys, but my hair seems to be getting longer by the day, and I'm not cutting it myself. Have you guys chosen to cut your own hair?
I did. It ended pretty predictably.
What about you, the always handsome Greg Rodriguez?
So this is when, those of you may not know this innovation, but I wish I had invested in a Flowbee and still had it, because that shows you the ingenuity of America by attaching a attachment to a vacuum, cutting your hair and taking up all the hair at the same time. Anybody who has those right now, tweet us, please, with a video of you using the Flowbee, and even if you have to go into your father or grandfather's closet. Yes, but I am very unkept, and I'm actually enjoying it.
Yeah, likewise. I'm back to the California hair. I'm waiting for someone to tell me to chop it off. but until then, we're going to see how far I can get. Okay, well, I think that both of you actually have some major life updates to share, don't you?
I'll let Greg go first. This is much more important.
I appreciate that. So yeah, we celebrated the birth of our first child. Our daughter, Zuri Marie, was brought into the world April 6th. So that I'm also using that as my excuse for being unkept, in addition to managing the current public health emergency. But very excited, very happy. And I'm also just excited to be talking with you two again. And I'm really looking forward to this episode just to talk about, I think, a lot of the transportation issues that have been on all our minds.
Yeah, it's been a while since the three of us have all gotten together. But Greg, I just want to note that I'm still Greg, I just want to note that I am still disappointed that you did not name your first child after me. And you at the same time. I think that was a big missed opportunity, but I understand. I'll wait for the second.
I think we have enough confusion with our initials already. That would be my argument.
Fair enough. And speaking of naming, Pete, what's new with you?
Good. So my firm has rebranded. So we've gone from Shared Mobility Strategies to Catapult Policy Strategies. We're very excited. We're going to continue focusing on not just shared mobility, but the broader ecosystem of startups that are looking to actually really improve not only just urban life, but just overall mobility and just all of the key factors. So check out our website at catapult-strategies.com.
Awesome. Awesome. What's the reason behind the name?
So for one, I've been counter to or contrary to what several people have suggested, I'm not at all bailing on shared mobility.
And you're not like a medieval siege engineer.
Not yet. No, I'm still working on that. But no, the point of the name change was that I'd been wanting to do that for 2 years just hadn't gotten around to it. And then second, on Catapult, that we focus a lot on helping, kind of newly launched but like ready to actually start deploy startups in this general space and helping them kind of make a lot of good moves early on and to be able to kind of do it right from the beginning instead of sprinting into walls and doing it the wrong way and then trying to explain it away later with big hires. So that's the kind of general nexus. Very, very excited. You know, there's obviously a new world, but that means that there's just kind of new strategies need to be built and new opportunities.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I say this not just because we're co-hosts, but I thought the website was actually substantive in how you're talking about addressing issues in addition to flashy. So congrats on that launch and to both of you on your major life events. Thank you. I don't have a lot to report other than
is this one pressuring you like we're your parents now?
Well, all I can say is that let's get into the show. this is gonna be a ride. So we've seen a lot happening in the last few months, and no matter how many projections we saw, no one could have predicted the massive shift in our society, in our economy that we've seen. And you know, this is an event that's where the effects of it are going to reverberate for decades and for generations. You know, before COVID-19, before social distancing measures, here's just a snapshot of what daily mobility in the U.S. looked like. 26 million children rode school buses. 100 million commuters drove to work. 24 million people rode public transit. 2.7 million people flew on over 44,000 flights. And 3 million truck drivers transport goods over a half billion miles. Today, we have 30 million Americans unemployed. Nearly every school bus is parked. Personal travel is down 46%. Public transit ridership is down by as much as 70%. And domestic flights average just 17 passengers. Plus, trucks are driving just about 13% fewer miles. We've seen a tremendous shift in what's happening in society. We've seen some major harms. But in order to solve or address or mitigate a very human problem, I think this has made us ask some important questions about what our daily lives look like, what mobility looks like. And in this episode, we're going to be looking at, you know, as we look towards the future, once we overcome this pandemic, what is the future? What does that look like? When you rebuild after a storm, you don't always rebuild exactly the same thing. You want to build it better. And so this episode is going to be focused on that. But first, I'm going to turn it over to Greg Rodriguez to hear how he's thinking about COVID-19 and how it's affecting mobility.
Yeah, no, that's the numbers you just provided are really sobering, Greg. And I hadn't really heard it all in one bunch. I remember reading it through your recent report, you know, just rethinking what's transportation going to be like. And I think, you know, in the work that I'm doing and with some of my colleagues, I mean, there is a huge focus on what does mobility look like after COVID-19. And I think the sobering picture you just painted is here to stay. Our challenge and our opportunity is how do we think not just getting out of this and getting back to the status quo, but how do we use this as an opportunity to fix some of the inequities and some of the parts of transportation that are broken that have come into full focus during this public health emergency. And the one that I've been thinking a lot about both personally and professionally is, you know, the link between mobility and health. And I think that link is, you know, economic health, it's mental health, it's physical health. And, you know, we have all these great opportunities around innovation that we'll be talking about in just a minute. I mean, even there was a New York Times article yesterday, you know, talking about how, you know, unfortunately we've been let down again, that this isn't the year that automated vehicles or self-driving vehicles become mainstream. And yeah, that may be the case, but I almost feel like those types of conversations are missing the point around how do we focus all the energy and ingenuity that exists and all that energy to want to make things better towards realizing the opportunities that come from automation and you know, things like grocery deliveries, things like, you know, being a supplement to transit in the next phase of whatever comes out of this public health emergency. So that's what I've been really focused on and thinking about and looking forward to digging into a little further with you all about, not just talking about, you know, the problems, but coming up with some tangible solutions.
Yeah, I totally agree. What about you, Catapete? Is that a great nickname? Do we like that?
Please don't. No, I mean, I agree with both of you. And I think, you know, my big focus is on that, like, we are really about to face a period, and that period is going to be from the, you know, the almost starting now, but especially from the moment that stay at home order is lifted in your city and or state to the time that, you know, we feel safe again, whether it's a, you know, vaccine, everyone has it, or this thing magically disappears, whatever, when, like, you know, at some point, hopefully, we're not going to be living in a, you know, under the umbrella of, or under the cloud of COVID. And, you know, from what we're hearing from experts, that's not a quick turnaround. You know, that there's going to be an extended period of this uncertainty and dramatic. And what we're looking at there is kind of a seismic shift in our mobility habits that's going to be determined during that period. And so, like, during that, you know, transit, obviously, or most likely, we're already seeing, and I just, you know, common sense is telling us that we don't want people bunched together for the time being. And even if we did, there's a lot of kind of understandable public nervousness and skepticism towards doing so. And so we're going to see dramatic drops there. We're already seeing in China and others as they're reopening, and even in some U.S. cities, before they reopen, the driving's coming back quickly and transit's not. And so, you know, what this period is going to is, you know, we've had times where, like, I don't know. So as a good example, in DC, when we knew the Pope was coming and it was going to be a security nightmare or inauguration, and people make quick adjustments that are, you know, treating it like this is, you know, you can just, I'll stay at work from home that day or whatever. But this is going to be an ongoing period where you start to see whole habits changed and formed and hardened. And so, you know, we talk, you know, as Greg was mentioning, and a lot of, you know, trust me, we've all been on 50 webinars about it, of what will COVID mean for the future? But I think, much like when you ask the question, what will AVs mean for the future? Will it mean more traffic, or will it mean this? I think that looking at it like that, it gives a sense of powerlessness and a kind of passive approach. And I think that this is really a critical time where we have to decide what we want and quickly plan and then implement and stick to the steps that take us to get there. Because otherwise, if we sit back passively, it is just going to be a Carmageddon situation with a little bit of a spike in bikes. But that without the infrastructure, it's just not safe. So I'm very focused on, like, the public space allocations element of this, as well as supportive policies.
And Pete, just to, you know, ask a quick question and safe Greg jump in too, but just on your point around habits changing, I think the one habit that will not change are those people that are driving alone. That's not changing, and that's the people that we were trying to change,
yeah,
or incentivize to change before COVID-19, right?
Yeah, they have no reason to change now, right?
Right.
Yeah, and it's so I think the scary, you know, the KPI that we should be all focused on is minimizing to the extent possible the number of new drive alone, single occupancy vehicle, you know, kind of commuters and travel habits.
Yeah, I think there is one positive area to look at. You know, what's interesting, and you guys might have seen this already, is that after the SARS pandemic, actually bike share or bike use went up in China significantly. And following COVID-19, as China began to open back up, bike share, I think the usage increased by 186%, if I recall correctly. So it's those sorts of things. We have to be creating opportunities for people to be focusing on those. Pete, you talked about public space allocation. That sort of weaves into this. How are you thinking about the way that we're sort of going to, that we should sort of reshape our cities and reshape the way that people are behaving or people are traveling?
Yeah, I mean, so a lot of these are the, you know, as we tend to see on when we talk about how do we combat traffic or any of these other climates, these are policies that people have wanted and, you know, people like that, you know, that I support and that I've agreed with have been pushing for a while. I think that it supercharges the need and even the scale and scope of those, whether, you know, I think what we're seeing is, you know, the big question is the open or the big kind of focus in our world is this open streets movement of converting, whether it's lanes or entire roadways that are currently for vehicles and flipping those and allowing them for pedestrians, bicyclists, even restaurants, in order to enable social distancing. I don't know if you guys have seen the kind of clip online of the person who basically puts on a giant tube circular thing that goes around him that with a six foot radius and then tries walking down the sidewalk in a city to be able to social distance and is, you know, unable to, you know, is bumping into everybody and that most of the sidewalks didn't even allow him to go through. So, you know,
that is incredible. Is that the future of mobility?
It could be, you know, but I mean, so, and, you know, and you've seen some cities be rock stars, you know, you've obviously abroad and in Europe, there's been a ton. You have Milan, you've got Paris, you've got Madrid, I believe is doing a ton as well, where you are just, you know, you're picking hundreds of miles or hundreds of kilometers of roadway and saying, we're going car free on these and opening it up and kind of a lot of the, you know, livable community, walkable streets, advocates, dream worlds are becoming reality within, you know, a week. You know, in the U.S., we've also had some standouts. We've got Oakland that I believe dedicated, was it 74 miles of roadways of city streets that they're going to make room for runners and cyclists and other non-vehicular traffic, you know. And so those, you know, and that conversation is happening now in the context of people need to be able to get out of their apartments or we're going to have a, you know, literally a revolution and for immediate social distancing. But, you know, these are not, the question will be, I guess, how much is this a pop-up that disappears and pops down immediately and we go back versus once people, you know, have the experience and get to see what this street could be when it's, you know, less dedicated to cars. You know, the belief has always been that once they have that opportunity, you know, it would be a lot harder to unpedestrianize or depedestrianize Times Square right now than it was to, you know, to decar it back in the day with Jeanette Sadiq Khan. You know, it's a lot easier to show them how good it is in practice. So, that's been a huge question. And actually what's funny is it started the first conversation and first debate was about whether or not bike repair shops are essential services. In some cities where they had not yet been deemed essential, but auto repair shops and gas stations were essential, you know, it kind of speaks to that. Is this a fundamental, you know, mode of transportation that we not only see as an equal, but that we want to promote, you know? And so I think what we're facing is, you know, the hardest part on of converting, you know, vehicle lanes or, you know, to bike lanes is the political will and the pushback from people, you know, who from whether it's parking or use. If you don't have that political will in this situation, I find it very difficult to imagine a world in the future outside or, you know, as we come out of this and everyone starts driving and then you say, oh, we traffic's terrible. We should probably take a lane away and give it to bicyclists, which while still a good policy, we all know how that policy debate plays out. And so, you know, I think what's really important is not only seeing this for its immediate benefits during a stay at home lockdown, you know, for people to run, for people to get out of their house, to walk, you know, and not be, you know, and while maintaining social distancing, but to see it also as kind of an audition for the, you know, maybe not all of these, and we'll have to iterate and be open to, you know, feedback. But this might be an opportunity to really catalyze that change because you know, what becomes key then is having the infrastructure plus the supportive policies in place for that day one when everybody is able to kind of travel a little bit more freely when a stay at home is lifted. Because if it's not there, between city budgets and political will and everyone just, reverting to a safe spot of a vehicle, it's going to be borderline impossible at that point. So that's, you know, I think likewise, Greg Rogers, the other thing we've seen a lot of has been reallocating parking for pickup drop-off zones. People have obviously leaned heavily on delivery services for groceries, for food, for basically everything, for booze. And that required, how do we do that safely? And that's where, you know, a lot of quickly deployed pickup drop-off zones or some zones have been deployed. And I'll be fascinated to see, do we maintain those afterwards and say, this is actually something we enjoy? So I think there's a lot of, you know, from the space allocation, that is going to be really critical to determine how many new people are driving versus, you know, especially for a new cyclist, you know, city, a lot of people don't bike in the cities because they don't feel safe from the infrastructure and mixed traffic perspective. And so encouraging people to be able to do that really is going to require above and beyond in terms of safety, as will just as more people are biking, you're going to have more interactions with cars unless you have protected infrastructure. So I think that's a key right there.
I think it's absolutely right. What do you think, Greg Rodriguez?
Oh, to that or to the future? That was a lot.
How are you thinking about the future?
The future. So, I mean, the one thing I will agree with Pete on is the political will part of it all. And I don't know how you do it right now with the comments that you made, Pete, around, you know, the focus being on COVID-19 and lack of budgets. I am inspired to see the movement around slow streets, healthy streets. We'll love to see it become something permanent. The only place that I've seen, and I could be wrong, and I know our listeners will let us know, is that have actually made a move to make things permanent is Seattle DOT, where they've actually said the places, you know, where we've had these temporary closures, we're going to move right now to make them permanent closures. And I think that gets to your point, Pete, and I think that's what you were trying to get at. Unless we have momentum and these actions are taken right now, if they're only temporary, the moment, as you said, we have that all clear and we're all back and there's a ton of traffic on the roads, the amount of complaints that are going to come from people are just going to make it a temporary pop-up, like that analogy that you used. And I don't know how we get there. I mean, from a spatial allocation standpoint, and maybe this is a question for Greg Rogers too, is, I mean, if there's ever a moment to be thinking about shared use mobility lanes, and kind of like, you know, you were talking about pickup and drop off zones, Pete, I mean, it just seems like right now is the time. So you don't take away a lane completely just for one use, but, you know, hopefully promote it for shared use. And I know it's hard to promote shared mobility right now during COVID-19, where we need to socially distance, but, you know, it could be shared and active transportation. You know, to think about a world where we have AV shuttles eventually, as we figure out some of the protocols around that, but then to also continue to promote e-scooters, e-bikes, that sharing economy, which hopefully continues to thrive as we figure out ways to decontaminate and make sure things are clean and put all those protocols in place. I mean, those are the moves that I would love to see happen more. But, you know, Greg Rogers, we know that, you know, there's a little bit of dissension or tension between the viewpoint that automated shuttles are still vehicles versus, you know, e-bikes or bikes or scooters being different types of devices that shouldn't have to share a space with anything that's considered a car or vehicle. So, I mean, I'd love to be seeing more of those conversations happening about how do we figure out spatial allocation and think about things like shared use mobility lanes, because I think it's the compromise that we need to be talking about. And that's just my opinion.
No, I think that's exactly right. You know, what is the value of an electric mile, right? If especially a shared one, if we're moving towards more socially beneficial sorts of modes of transportation, it doesn't matter to me what size or shape the vehicle is. It matters in achieving you know, reductions in congestion and greenhouse gas emissions. It's increasing access to the services that people need. You know, I think of like Starships, you know, sort of smaller delivery pods, right? You know, some might laugh at them, but like those could be one valuable way to make connections, as is, you know, Refraction AI with their delivery vehicles, all the way up to Neuro, which has purpose-built vehicles that are going to assist in contactless delivery and are already doing so in California. You know, I think there's a big opportunity for us to rethink, you know, once again, how are we currently structuring the way that we get goods and people from place to place? And how do we maximize, you know, the social, economic, environmental benefits? Look at that triple bottom line to serve people more equitably.
Yeah. No, and just thinking, I mean, the word that I've been really focused on right now is community. And another, just to, you know, not to be all doom and gloom, and a positive side of all this has been seen, you know, here in DC, the number in our neighborhood, the number of people walking around together, and it sucks to have to play the zigzag game, but you still like give each other a nod, even when you're playing a zigzag game.
After like, you're done playing Red Rover, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. And the, you know, most people are being patient with each other and understanding. And that's what I think has been missing in society. And I know I'm going kind of philosophical and I might shed a tear, but maybe it's because I'm sleep deprived and can hear the baby crying. But yeah, just like, how do we, again, like turn this into an opportunity to think about community? And if anything, what is the heart of the problem? Why don't we have the space to walk around hula hooping without hitting anybody, right? Or to be able to socially distance while we're biking? And it's because of single occupancy driving and the priority that we've given to vehicles. And I'm not saying that we need to get rid of all cars. I'm not that, I don't believe that's even possible. I think everybody needs to have options, but how do we think about transportation more holistically and to, you know, kind of like Michael Jackson said, you know, the man in the mirror, it's a pretty good song. If you haven't listened to it lately, give it a, you know, give it a listen. If you just kind of want to think about, what am I doing to help
you're contribute? You're up at 4 a.m. with your child.
Yeah, no, that might have been when it came on. Everything's a blur recently. But it is kind of like everything we were talking about, climate change and what impacts, what are you doing to help the problems? I think it's kind of a time for some soul searching as we're not flying around and jet setting and running from conference to conference, to kind of look in the mirror and say, what am I doing to make sure that we come out of this better?
Well, and Greg, I think that's a great point on the community sense, because I think what is getting lost is like the you're highlighting a lot of the, you know, people screaming at state legislators, or whatever. But the like we've never had an act of nationwide like personal compromise of just sacrifice from your daily life to actually do a stay at home at the magnitude and overall, you know, obedience that we've done, like, is just a pretty, it's just shockingly, it's really impressive. And I don't think that gets highlighted enough. I'm curious, and this actually, I think, transitions well to what Greg Rogers wants to highlight on this, is does that help or hurt the climate, you know, and the efforts that are needed on climate change? Is there is there sacrifice fatigue, or is there a new renewed spirit of like, yeah, actually we can really like, you know, flatten the curve on something as terrible as COVID when we all work together. Now let's do it on climate change. Or does it backfire the opposite sense of like, yeah, the last thing I need to be like hearing about now is shared sacrifice?
Yeah, I mean, this it hits on my sort of recurring theme in the past 2 months, which is if we're going to build it back, let's build it back better. And we have the wind in our sails, right? We've seen the innovations happening in micromobility. We've seen this enthusiasm about active transportation. Yes, we still have land use issues. Yes, those are going to take a long time. You know, buildings last for 100+ years, right? But the vehicles people use, the modes that they use to travel, that's where we can make the most immediate impact. And you know, in terms of the winds in our sails, I mean, we have $300 billion in the automotive industry globally, investing in preparing for EVs. We're looking at our communities, hopefully, still realizing some of the air quality gains that we've seen.
The LA pictures are just...
It's incredible. You can see the buildings.
There are mountains out there. Did you know that?
Yeah. I mean, it's astounding, right? And, you know, hopefully people remember what that looks like, what it feels like. You know, on a personal note, I come from the Central Valley of California, country boy from the middle of nowhere. And Central Valley has some of the worst air quality in the U.S. The county I come from and the neighboring one have some of the worst air pollution right next to L.A. And these are, you know, rural areas. And all these stories were coming out about how bad air quality means that people are more likely to die as a result of contracting COVID-19 just because of and I'm not an epidemiologist or a doctor, but I can quote LA Times on this one. It's concerning. There are a lot of communities that are being hurt by poor air quality, and we're seeing that connection between emissions and people's health in this sort of extreme way. And you know, the hope really is that we do build it back better, and that people are able to rethink their travel options. Hopefully, we can rethink our land use too, and help people get to and from work. Bike shops across the country are constantly sold out of bikes right now, which makes me so happy. If I can give a shout out to City Bikes, I actually ran into the owner of City Bikes in DC in Rock Creek Park not too long ago when we were biking around. And he was saying that they're constantly out of bikes right now. And bike shops across the country, there are tons of articles about this. They're all running out of bikes. Ride your bikes to work. You'll feel so good. And that's the hope, is that people will start to see those benefits.
Yeah. And just to pick up on a point you made around options. So I think this goes back to the equity point. So how do we make sure that those options exist for, you know, the communities that were already underserved, right? So I think it's great we see more people biking, but then I think about some of our neighbors who are seniors, and they can't bike right now because they're older. A lot of them, you know, may have some disabilities or some underlying health conditions. And so they're the most vulnerable people that are at risk of contracting coronavirus. And often I think we don't realize a lot of them are living alone. And so in a time like this, when you can't even socialize with anybody, and you have to make this difficult decision, if you are already relying on public transit and you don't have any other option, do you go get groceries, or do you, you know, stay home and, you know, be hungry or potentially not eat healthy things, or eat a lot of canned foods as opposed to, you know, fresh, healthy foods, in order to avoid contracting the virus? And, you know, those inequities already existed, and now they're more clear than ever. And so how do we, to your point, Greg, and the theme I think that we're talking about, how do we make things better and think about ways and prioritize addressing those needs right now? And that's where I get a little frustrated. Again, these are my own opinions, but where I get frustrated with Congress, you know, thinking about recovery packages, and a check is great, I think, for a lot of people, and it's great to see that happening. But, you know, where is the conversations around the value of transportation? I think you said that, Greg. And to really think about, we should be thinking about, I'm not saying a $1 trillion infrastructure bill or $2 trillion infrastructure bill, but some sort of funding towards transportation to make sure that we don't leave anybody behind, and we really use this as an opportunity.
Yeah, and I think along those same lines too, I think one of the supportive policies that I'm kind of talking about that are really important is, yeah, everyone, like, it's great, everyone should run out and get a bike. A lot of folks, you know, if you're living not right within the kind of city center or where you're trying to get, a longer bike ride is a deterrent, whether from physical abilities or just even for those who might be able to, but that sounds hard, you know, that doesn't sound like a viable option. And that's where e-bikes really do come in as a great kind of equalizer and kind of superhuman strength ability. The problem is e-bikes are really expensive, you know? And so that's, I do believe that in addition to, you know, good micromobility policy where you already have built in strong equity components, the personal owned side of this, I think, will require subsidizing for, particularly for low income people, you know, because if you're okay, but that's great, but I've got kids. It's like, well, you can get a cargo e-bike. Those things are like between $1,500 and up to like $5,000, which at some point, you know, you're it's more expensive than a used car. And so I do think that the equity component of encouraging more cycling will require, you know, kind of the EV tax credit of e-bikes.
I could not agree more. You know, a couple of months ago at SAFE, we started this report that we ended up naming Get America Moving Again, that presented a strategy for not just stimulating the economy once we've overcome this pandemic, but helping people to get around after this pandemic subsides. And of course, transit is still the backbone of many urban areas. But as Pete said, you know, there are people who live in outlying areas, especially as we're watching gentrification continue to unfold, who need transportation options. And there is no silver bullet. There's no silver bullet. There's a big opportunity here, which we highlighted, which is let's create parity and equity among sort of the electric vehicle tax credits. What's the value of an electric mile? It is helping someone get from place to place, and it's reducing the negative externalities of our current transportation sector. We should have a tax credit for the same person who's buying an e-bike, who maybe where a tax credit makes it affordable for them to get, just like we have for buying a full-size electric vehicle. And you know what? It's actually better government money spent to be supporting the purchase of smaller lightweight devices, reduce congestion, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and gives pretty accessible transportation options.
Well, I think it's important.
Oh, I feel like Wolf Blitzer, Pete, where we say we lost Pete.
Oh, we lost Pete.
We lost Pete. Pete
muted himself.
So Pete? another hey, issue we should, oh, another issue we'll be talking about is wireless infrastructure, folks.
No, it's figuring out when the mute button's on. No, but I was saying, I want to make it clear, we're not writing off public transit, but transit is going to go through a horrible spell right now. And I think we almost need to, we'll do a separate episode that's specifically on how transit can get through this and what that looks like and what the long-term play is.
Mm-hmm. It's right. I mean, to that point, and I think it's, maybe this is a way to kind of think about solutions and kind of wrap up our discussion. But I mean, what do we think a holistic transportation looks like, or holistic transportation system looks like in the future? I was on another webinar by that was held this week by Minnesota, and I apologize, I'm gonna butcher the organization, but it was essentially the engineers group within Minnesota, and they were, someone brought up the really good analogy around tracking trends, you know, that have occurred within the transportation system. So with 9/11, you know, big focus on security, we had TSA, that's here permanently. In 2008, we had a reduction in local budgets that led to a lot of privatization of traffic management. And now, to your point, Pete, you know, transit's been hit really hard. I think we're seeing, you know, declines in ridership by, I think it's like 75%, if I remember correctly, by some of the APTA stats. Mm-hmm. Is that going to lead to more privatization of transit? And I don't say that in a bad way. I say that in a way of thinking about, you know, how do we realize efficiencies and think about limited funding? I mean, again, going back to the point I just made that we can't even get momentum around funding for an infrastructure bill right now. We got the fund $25 billion for transit in the first recovery package. But again, like, is this going to mean more privatization? And is that a good or bad thing? And the danger of an over-reliance on privatization as well. Again, there's so many triggers with this, because then a lot of companies are going to go bankrupt. So if you have a company that, you know, gets the job to be the provider of transit within a community and you have another crisis and they go bankrupt, then how does transit still operate if it was completely privatized? So that's something I've been kind of thinking about as well. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts.
Yeah, I think it'll be fascinating how private industry steps up to help transit get through this. Mm-hmm. You know, we hear a lot of micromobility companies, TNCs, you name it, in the tech world, who talk about their love for cities, and whether or not they're stepping up to advocate for cities now, you know, and not just a nice press release or whatever, but like, these same companies have heavy lobbying arms, and they have influence and they have users. And so, like, on, you know, the question of whether or not we should let states and cities go, you know, states and the, and thus their cities as well, go bankrupt. That's a question, you know, that's a fight for like the survival of cities and state governments around the country that I would love to see the same fervor and an effort put into supporting the cities as has gone into some of the fights with cities.
Yeah. Cause that's your potential operating domain and your clients. So
cities aren't all connected to government. So
yeah, it's all connected. It's really interesting to think about. Of course, it can lend you down rabbit holes that, you know, break your head and then have you listening to Man in a Mirror, but just really great.
That could be great.
Great conversations that I'm glad we're having here, and I'm glad to be participating in nationally as well.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, this has been great, and I'm glad to be back. You know, recording again with you guys, and I think I'm glad also that we took a little bit of time for all of us to kind of think through what's going on, and not just kind of let's do a what does COVID mean right now kind of thing. Cause I think that we need to really start pushing, you know, for action and planning and thoughtfully responding to a crisis, so that we come out stronger. So this has been a great episode. I've really enjoyed, doing it with you guys.
Absolutely. And I guess to close us out, what are you guys excited to be working on, right now, or moving forward this year, from the comfort of course, your own homes?
Yeah, so, I found it fascinating, you know, the combo of trying to do what is the world right now, much less where is the world going, and then how can clients be part of that. But in the more short term, helping game out and then execute, and really just seeing the sincere, how sincere, you know, companies I'm working with have been about, like, what can we do? Like, regardless of, like, this isn't a what's our play long term. It's like, no, like, we've got this. They need that. How can we get that to them? And how can we be part of the solution? So that is actually, you know, been, as Greg was saying about the community element, we have seen a good amount of sincere, you know, community focused action given the crisis.
What about you, Greg?
Yeah, no, and I continue to delve into the world of data, which is perhaps a hotter topic than ever, not just mobility data, but just thinking through just continue the use of digital platforms, and who owns the data and how much should be shared, and how do we consider privacy and public trust and transparency, especially as we think about the use of potential use of apps for contact tracing. I think it's just fascinating. And then I was really excited to see that the Mobility Data Collaborative released its guidelines for mobility data sharing that's focused on governance and contracting. Was glad to be a part of that effort and encourage people to give it a read and let me know what you think.
Great. And I am thrilled to be working on a new thing that I had been, it's not a new thing, it's an old thing. I'm hoping that we can move back towards positivity this year on autonomous vehicles. I am on a crusade to get us back to realize that we got swept away, or the conversation got swept away by a lot of techno-utopian sort of promises, while many of us, I think, including those of us on this podcast, were saying, you know, this is going to take a while. Let's not get caught up in the dream. You know, I am now the crusader for AV optimism / realism. So maybe I should create a website so everyone can join the movement. And the second part is Save Skid America Moving Again, a proposal which we had finished, a brief looking at how we can help people get back to work safely after this pandemic, stimulate our economy, focus on new technologies, and prepare for the next one. For those who are interested, if you guys don't mind me making a plug, secureenergy.org/gamma, or just tweet at me, send me hate mail, whatever it might be, or just do a hashtag gamma. So where do we find you guys online?
I was just going to say, it sounds like kind of like the movie How Stella Got Her Groove Back. It's how Safe Greg gets his groove back on automated vehicles. I'm pretty excited to see this, Greg.
Well, we all fell in the trough of disillusionment. I won't lie. I did as well. You know, there was a strange day a few years ago. I woke up and I asked myself, do I really care about AVs? My next answer, the next second, was, of course, yes. But hopefully we can get back to that, to seeing the promise and recognizing so the progress is incremental.
Yeah.
Well, where do we find you guys online?
This is Greg Rodriguez. Oh, go ahead. Go,
you'll find us cross-talking on Twitter.
You can find me at Catapult. Paul, I got to look that up, actually. No. I'll let Greg do it. We should edit this.
What am I? This is Greg Rodriguez. You can find me at Smarter Transpo.
And this is Pete Gould. You can find me on Twitter at Catapult Policy.
Great. And I am at AV Greg R. Find the Mobility Podcast at Mobility Podcast. Check out our website, mobilitypodcast.com. And stay tuned for our episode next week, where we're excited to have a great panel to talk about COVID-19, how transportation is being affected by it, and dig into these topics a lot more. It'll be a live format too, so you can see my long hair, Greg's unkempt, apparently unkempt appearance, and Pete will be as handsome as ever. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Stay safe and healthy.